Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 190, recorded January 4th, 2011. Kids are the greatest. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync with My Ford Touch. Make calls, play music, and more with Sync with My Ford Touch. Available exclusively on Ford and Lincoln vehicles. For more information and online demos, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything you would like to know, would need to know, would want to know from the folks in Redmond, Washington, that little company, that mom-and-pop shop that's made such a difference in personal computing. Yes, we know them as TinySoft, Microsoft. And here he is.
We're back, baby.
Back for a new year, Mr. Paul Thurrott. Hey, Paulie.
How you doing?
Do people call you Paulie, or do they get punched in the nose when they do that?
Only once, Leo. Only once.
So you're. This is CES week. In fact, we're doing the show a little early this week because I'm going to be in Vegas on Thursday, baby. But you're not going.
Thursday. You're going Thursday.
Well, I'm leaving tomorrow, Wednesday. We're doing this on Tuesday.
Because, you know, the Microsoft keynote is Wednesday night.
I will be in town.
You're going to want to pay attention to this one.
Well, that's what I thought, and I'm going to ask you all about it.
But I can't tell you all about it, but...
You know about it, though. You
can speculate.
Well, we know there'll be Windows tablets.
No, actually, I don't know much about it specifically, and that is actually very interesting.
That they didn't brief you, as they say.
They very specifically didn't brief anybody. In fact, well, we'll get to that.
You want to save that?
Yeah, save it.
We'll save it.
That's coming.
We'll save it. But first, Happy New Year, Paul Thurrott. I have in my hands a very fine tome.
I'm embarrassed that you had to get that without my help.
Actually, it's even worse.
I'm sorry.
Our intern, who we pay $20 a day to, actually purchased this $40 book. This is how valuable it is. 2 days of labor to pay for this.
Should I personally apologize to this person?
Yeah, that means this book, for me, this is like a $20,000 book.
Nice. Nice.
Or,
put another way, more money than I will ever make on that book.
Yes, exactly. No, I'm excited. I Alex Gumpel, who works very hard for us for very little money, spent his hard-earned money on this, and it's beautiful. I have to say, it's a gorgeous, wonderful compendium.
Yeah, I always wish that my books were in color.
Yeah, well, it's green, black, and white. There is another color.
Yeah, there is. It's a two color.
Actually, there's green and light green, so that counts as two, right? I do like, however, I do like the handwritten marginalia.
Yeah,
I think that's nice. Yeah. Is that your?
Although that is my signature on the front,
and I love that. It looks a little bit like John Hancock. I mean, did you just sign that with a fountain pen? How did you do that?
I was on a business trip when they asked me to do this. So I grabbed a Sharpie at the hotel desk.
Looks good.
Wrote it on a piece of paper, scanned it in the business center, and then emailed them the graphic, and they converted it.
Wow. The subheading, you didn't write this.
I love how you trip over this.
I know you didn't write this.
No, I did not. I understand that if there's anything... marketing related, I had nothing to do with it.
I know you didn't write this. No writer would write this. Do what you never thought possible with your Windows Phone 7.
I think that is part of the slogan for the series.
I think a German wrote this.
And it's perfect because you have to stumble over it, whether you're reading it out loud or reading it to yourself to make sure. I guess that is
it
English.
It sounds like a double negative. Do what you never thought possible.
Right.
What if they said do the impossible? No, because it's not impossible.
No,
it's just
that
you couldn't do it.
Right.
It's do what you never thought possible with your Windows Phone 7. Well, now I'm liking it now.
It makes me It makes me tongue-tied, and I feel weird in my stomach.
But it's beautiful. They did, you know, they did beautiful production. And by the way, I don't know how, but my name is on the back of this.
Is it really?
It says about the author.
Oh, right. Yeah, because actually, anytime I describe myself now, I actually have to use your name. Because
in association with.
It's yeah. In fact, it might be a legal requirement.
I believe it's in your contract, Paul.
In fact, I sometimes I'll introduce myself to people on the street and say, "Hello, I'm Paul Thrott, as seen on Leo Laporte's Twit Network." And then a little cash register sound occurs,
yes,
and somewhere 5 cents goes in.
A nickel every single time. That came from the I was in the lobby the other, you know, several years ago, and I said, if I only had a nickel for every time Paul mentions my name, and they actually put it in the contract. I guess the lawyer heard it.
They do, yeah. Yeah, you don't understand the power you wield. When you say stuff.
They do it.
It just happens, and sometimes you don't even notice that it happened.
Paul Thurrott runs Supersite for Windows, a world-renowned Windows-oriented website for which we will not give you a link. He is the author. By the way, they don't. They could have said winsupersite.com, but no. He's the author of more than 20 books. Wow, Paul, you've surpassed myself. I stopped at the lucky number 13.
Every one of them was like winning the lottery.
I know. Like, every one of them was like birthing a baby or passing a gallstone.
Let's discuss my active server pages phase, which lasted from 1996 until roughly a month ago.
By the way,
and
I just want to point out that Brando T. Grant in our chat room is saying this is slowly turning into a bad morning show.
Well, it is morning, and you know
it is. It's we're doing this earlier than we want. A columnist for Windows IT Pro Magazine and the co-host of the popular, Windows Weekly podcast. It is popular with Leo Laporte.
You have to think, I don't know what relationship you have with Apple, but for our podcast to even be in some kind of iTunes list is itself a minor miracle.
Not because of anything we did, but because it, in fact, was one of the top 100 podcasts of 2010. That was totally based on subscriptions.
It must have killed them to have to acknowledge that.
Congratulations. This is the first chance I've had to congratulate you. It still is. If you go to the iTunes 2010 Rewind for podcasts, you will see Windows Weekly, one of the top of the year, and rightly so.
I guess. You know, I watched our best of retrospective. And I have to say, I have a number of mixed feelings about everything that I do, but... first of all, it's great. And whoever put that together, thank you. And you did a great job, you know, hosting it and all that stuff. I hate listening to myself speak. And in fact, I question the sanity of anyone listening to this, but.
Oh, good. Just tune out now, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, I've spent my entire career trying to get rid of fans, but I have to say, it caused me to go back and listen to the best of episodes, or actually watch the best of episodes of some of the other Twit podcasts like Mac Break Weekly and so forth. And it was an interesting experience. I mean, it's a neat thing that you do.
We're going to do this, and as long as we're giving credit to Eileen Rivera, who has really turned around the quality of these shows, but not your show particularly, but just in general by producing them. And Twit particularly, because nobody was producing that. I was producing that. That was a mistake. But also, so she collated all the clips, did all the hard work. Our editors, Tony Wang. I think Tony did most of it. I'm not sure who did the Windows Weekly, but they did a great job. And also thanks to the viewers, because remember, we asked for people to submit their suggestions.
There was stuff I had completely forgotten about because, of course, I have early onset Alzheimer's. But I was really... It was funny to watch. I enjoyed my latte rant. more than most other people, but
it was a huge success. The download numbers are through the roof for these best ofs. So, and I think it's a great way to introduce people as you experienced to a show that they may not have watched before.
Right.
Maybe they've listened to it, or maybe they never even heard of it. So, we're going to do best ofs again next year. That'll be our kind of new tradition in the week after Christmas.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I like it.
And what we're doing this time, because it was really, poor Eileen, it was fairly painful. What we're doing this time is we will actually be actively collating those. And I think what we're going to do is keep that best of page just up year round. so people can nominate you around. Yeah.
I was also fascinated by how my son is a regular punching bag in my life. I never realized.
That was just that one time with the fish.
Well, there were two times because, and the funny thing is they happened in the best of episode. I mean, those two events were within a week of each other, right? Yeah. There was
the fish,
the Call of Duty night.
Yep. Oh, yeah, you
and
kept him up late.
And then he came home to get the Kinect, and there was a sign on the TV that said you can't use it. And you should have seen his face. Well, I guess you did eventually. But, I mean, it was this kind of thousand-yard stare, you know. He's looking at me through the glass like, I will never forgive you for this.
Oh, man.
You know, you could never buy me a nice enough car for this to be okay. You know?
Hey, you know, speaking as a parent of teenagers, he's going to hate you by then anyway. It doesn't really Might as well accelerate the process. Anyway, Windows Phone 7 Secrets should have been under your tree. If it wasn't, go out and get it. It's on Wiley & Sons available right now. One more thing I'm going to ask our fans to do, and then I want to get your New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. And that is to go to twit.tv, our main homepage, which is in the process of being utterly revamped and redesigned. It has been for the last 7 months. And that page at the very top, unless you have an ad blocker on it.
Are you moving off of ASP now?
I hear you have written a fantastic content management system, Paul. Would you like to license that?
Unfortunately, it was written on the Commodore 128.
The new stuff is going to be great. It's just we want to do it right. And so it takes a little time. As does all development. But if you go to the top of the page there, you'll see, please take our survey. We're looking, we do this yearly, our advertising agency, PodTrack, knows how many people listen to the show, but what we would like to know even better is who you are. Not like where you live, who you
what
are.
What is wrong with you?
why you are listening?
It's a short psychological exam.
it's about five pages, maybe 100 questions in all. And what we're trying to do is get an idea of ages, demographics, that kind of thing. No personal information is being gathered. You can read the privacy policy on the page there. We are trying to get an aggregate information about our audience in general. It helps us sell the show, so it really is very valuable for us if you do take that survey. I appreciate your time. At the end, we'll ask you if you want to be on the PodTrack research panel, which is an even more valuable tool for us. From time to time, you'll be asked some additional questions having to do with ads you may or may not have heard on this show.
I'm sorry. I every once in a while, I see a headline that I wish I had written.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to interject this here, but it's just so funny. I have to tell you this. This is from IT World. It says, Microsoft RTF file exploit is like being murdered by a chipmunk.
Nibbled to death. My sorry, tiny I just rodent
thought that
teeth.
Was creative. Okay.
Death by chipmunk. It's like this show.
Yeah, it's very much like
this
show.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, everybody. And yeah, we'll do the best of again next year. I think it's mostly of useful people who haven't listened to each and every episode several times, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there are some who've never perhaps heard the wit and wisdom of Paul Thurrott. So it's a chance for them to experience that in person.
Or be infected, as we call it.
28 days later. New Year's resolutions? Have you made some?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I have. Leo, I'm going to lose weight this year.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
No.
We've all made that resolution.
I've never made that resolution publicly.
Really?
This
is going to be the year. Are you going to get one of those tweeting scales and let us know how you're doing?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, my wife asked me if I was going to do that. I might, actually. I'm not going to do it on the podcast, so don't worry. This will be the last you ever hear of this. But I, if you're following me on Facebook, I'll probably post stuff up there occasionally.
I think it's a good idea. Because the support of your friends, family, close listeners, that kind of thing is really
I think
helpful.
Just the fact that I've announced this to the world is going to help me do it. But
it hasn't helped me yet, by the way, but I just want, I want to discourage you.
No, I've always been very nervous about stating something that I'm going to do, because I have all these friends who've made these, pronouncements at various points in their lives, and you can kind of watch it just never happening, but I think I actually have the answer, and I think I'm going to make it happen.
Really?
So.
Well, if you have the answer, share it with all, because we're all desperate.
I will.
Echelon says, you'll probably lose the weight, find it again, and it'll bring friends.
See, this is why I never say stuff
ridicule.
Like this. I'm actually going to lose weight this year. So good. I don't mean to say, I say that.
Are you going
to
do PX90? Are you going to do kettlebells? Are you going to do?
No.
Actually, if you want to see the craziest, and I mean the absolute craziest scam ever, Google, I think it's a fat burn furnace or fat burning furnace. No, seriously. And by the way, I found this on Facebook. This is insane.
Yeah, it's fatburningfurnace.com. No,
and here's why.
Oops.
If you go to its website, they have a website that has this supposed testimonial of a husband and a wife, both who lost a crazy amount of weight in a very short period of time. Every other link that you'll see on Google or Bing or whatever are fake websites set up by the same company. If you search for like fat burning furnace scam, these guys have written hundreds of, that's them. You're showing the graphic.
Quite attractive.
I noticed they're not actual fake pictures. Reviews of this thing, hundreds, that purport to say, you know, this thing looks like it's a scam, but actually in testing it, it isn't. And they even have minor criticisms that differ from review to review. But then they have this huge list of pros, including it actually works.
How about truth?
That is the most
that's clever.
Unbelievable scam I've ever seen in my life. Spend time Googling this. I'm serious.
Yeah. You'll be freaked by this. I found truth about burningfat.com.
Right. So now watch this. When you try to leave that page, you'll get a pop-up.
Yeah.
And this pop-up appears on almost every one of these reviews as well.
Oh,
are you sure you want to leave this page? Because, you know, you're not going to lose weight if you lose this page.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Clicking the cancel button.
And that's how you can tell they're all from the same place, because you'll get the same pop-up from that site as well. It's crazy. I'm telling you, you could navigate to the first, I bet, 50 links on Google, and every one of them will be a fake review. Every one of them.
Wow.
I have never seen anything like that on the web, ever.
Wow.
It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. So that is, in fact, how I'm going to lose weight.
It's got to be good. If that many people
love it. It's
got
all those reviews.
Is fat burning furnace a scam? No.
Right. No, of course not.
No, it's not. Fat burning furnace reviews. Wow, this is clever. So in other words, if you're going to do
every
a scam,
one of those, every
get
one
all
of
the associated names, scam, you know, and then put sites up there.
It's ingenious in a way. I'm just shocked that's even possible. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. Well, we'll send a note off to our friend Matt Cutts at Google.
This is a very unique case, I think.
Yeah.
As far as something that's, you know, borderline.
They own all of the, almost all of the top search results for fat.
Every one
furnace.
Of these reviews mentions that these guys are listed in the Better Business Bureau and have an A1 rating or whatever the rating is. And we checked and it's real. You know, it's like they really do have this rating.
But I'm still getting a pop-up.
Yep. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yep. This goes on for pages and pages, Leo.
And by the way, I got this when I searched for scam, fat burning for scam.
Right.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, because that's the first thing. You watch the commercial and you're watching TV and commercials come on, and it's a weight loss supplement or a device that does 21 different functions, whatever it is. And then you go to Google and you type in name of product scam, and then you can see what people have written about it and you can decide for yourself. And this one, I was just curious, because if you actually go and watch their awful video, it's basically a presentation in a flash video. They keep talking about how you're going to push a button and it's going to work. And 20 minutes into it, you're like, seriously, what's the, you know? And it just goes and it goes and it goes. And it's unbelievable.
If I Bing fat burning furnace complaints.
Same thing. Sure. Of course.
Same thing.
No, there are no legitimate complaints. No. I have never seen such an effective campaign to rid the world of anyone who has a legitimate anything to say about this product. It's crazy. Yeah. Seriously, have you ever seen anything like this?
Very clever.
Yeah.
Wow. It is. This is a very interesting use of, and I wanted to say Google, but really it's not Google. It's everybody. It's
probably SEO, you know, some SEO genius thing or whatever it is. I don't know how they do it, but.
Well, you just buy a lot of URLs and put a lot of pages up. It's the same technique, by the way, used. There's a company, I don't remember the name exactly, that says they will fix your reputation online. Have you seen this? And there's a cheap version that really does nothing, because you can't, you know, if you for $10 a month, there's nothing they can do. But if you pay, I think it was 10 or 13 grand, what they essentially do is they hire somebody to put up a lot of pages with your name in it. and they're all positive pages.
Oh, God.
And the theory being by doing so and cross-linking all those pages that they will show up in Google instead of the page that says, you're a big fat bum. Right.
Yikes.
Isn't that interesting? I don't know how well that works.
I am fascinated that in this day and age, this kind of campaign is even technologically possible. It just seems like the type of thing someone would take advantage of until the search engines figured it out and then got rid of it all. You know, it just doesn't seem possible. It's like when you get a spam in Gmail or Hotmail and it's clearly, you know, some awful spam message with, you know, a letter instead of a, you know, a number instead of a letter, and it's a brand name, but it's not really for the brand name. And how did this get through in 2010 or 2011 now? I don't know. And here it is.
Yeah, I find that just fascinating. I think it's a big cat and mouse game is what it really is. And so as soon as the search engines figure out, oh, we got to do this.
Right. I mean, so there's this business, and maybe it's this couple essentially, where I don't think there's a couple.
Whatever you think that couple exists? I think it's a Russian.
No, I don't mean it's that couple.
It's a Russian guy.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm sorry. But I mean, it could be a very small operation. Family living in a McMansion in Florida or something. And all they do literally is play this game. It's sort of like the high-tech version of playing the markets every day, you know, doing your own stock investing or whatever. I mean, it's insidious. I'm just astonished by it. You
know? So resolution number one, lose weight, and you've announced it publicly here. I will join you. My resolution is also to lose weight, as it has been for the last 23 years.
Yeah, of course.
And I actually weigh more now than I've ever
weighed. That's the awful thing about weight gain, of course, is that it generally happens a couple pounds a year.
Yeah, exactly. It's gradual.
And if you live long enough, you look like me. So,
Paul, you're a handsome fella. I would kill to weigh what you weigh.
By the way, have you ever tried that fabulous
acai formula? That is great stuff. Let me just tell you about my special milkshake.
Okay.
How do you pronounce that? A-C-A-I that you get all that spam for? Acai? 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 It's a palm berry, right? Forget it. I'm sorry I brought it up. What else? Anything about Windows? Anything at all, please? Have you read the book Windows Phone 7 Secrets? It will change your life. It will tell you how to do 10 impossible things before breakfast.
Sure.
Acai.
Actually, I should be thanking Microsoft, because one of the big concerns with this book was, you know, you publish a book and then everything changes and half of it's out of date.
Well, that's why I wonder why anybody
hasn't updated Windows Phone once. So my book is completely relevant.
Aren't we supposed to get an update like soon, like this month?
Like 30 days ago? Yeah, sure. It could happen as soon as Wednesday night. I mean, we'll see. Nobody seems to really know for sure. What about you, Leo? Do you have any...
resolutions?
Actual resolutions of any sort?
More Pilates.
Really? It's about the sitting on the ball is kind of like doing Pilates.
That was what I was told 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you must have a rock hard core.
Oh, I do. Come on.
Somewhere deep in your body, you know?
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. It's buried below several layers of fat, but it's rock hard. I have six pack abs. You just can't see them.
You just can't see them, yeah.
It's under the keg.
Right. Yeah, someone's... Yeah, right, exactly. I don't have a six-pack. I have more like a keg. A truck of beer, as it were.
Oh, God. But let me tell you, I could crack a... Never mind. Anything else? Do you have any...
You know, technologically, I was going to say... I'll hold off that for the tip. I've got a tip of the week for this week that's kind of related to this, but... yeah, I mean, I've sort of redone my office a little bit. The exercise machine's still in here, but now you can't see it on the podcast. I didn't really do that for you, but
that's part of the resolution.
Well, yeah,
I like the new look. You've got a fez. That's good. You've got an arrow saying the new Windows XP Master Certificate class, and then an arrow pointing to the fez.
It's actually Media Center Edition, but
whatever. I can't read it. It's pointing at the fez, which is good.
It is. Pointing at the fez, yeah.
You've got a bookshelf. You've got a floor lamp.
It's actually, I don't know, I'm turning the wrong way. There's a Mac Mini back there.
Oh, wow. What's that doing there?
It's just waiting for the App Store to open.
You got to think micro. Now, that's supposed to happen on the 6th, day after tomorrow, right? See, you know, this, I have to, we'll get to the CES stuff in just a second, but
yep.
Apple is so good at deflating CES. They've, at the point.
Oh, listen, they could make a career out of this.
They have.
All Apple has to do is on the morning of CES, the first day, announce the iPhone on Verizon. And I can tell you, it will be like Las Vegas never existed.
Yeah. And it kills me because all we are spending a lot of money and bringing...
Right. All these companies send all these people, spend yes. all this money. There's 110,000 people in there or whatever it is. And Apple can make one announcement. And I can tell you, no one will cover any of it.
Yep.
None of it.
No.
Except for that Apple thing.
Last year, the iPad wasn't out yet, but all we talked about was iPad. Well,
we didn't even know what it was.
We didn't even know. We thought it was a slate. We called iSlate. But that's that was a couple of years ago. Before that, it was the iPhone. And I think that I think you're right. Now, Verizon has
a keynote.
I was
at a CES where, you know, HP announced that they were licensing the iPod. And you know, the funny thing is, if you remember, there was a lot of stuff that never happened.
Right.
That HP told us was going to happen.
I do remember that. I forgot about that.
But one of the things that they showed on stage, you'll remember this, it was Carly Fiorina, and she was up there with Steve Jobs. She held a blue iPod. And the idea was, we're going to make this blue iPod. Back then, the iPods were just iPods, and they were white. And then when that thing finally shipped a couple of months later, it was just white. And it had an HP logo etched in the back. And, of course, the etching became a feature of iPods. I'm not sure if you could even do etching on your own back then, but eventually it did. But that was the only difference, right? Apple would not let them screw with the iPod. And that was very interesting. But that was like a nuclear bomb went off at CES. And we were with a guy that I used to travel with a lot and used to write with me. We had a lot of good contacts at HP, and we were talking to those guys. And, you know, there were all this stuff they were going to do that never materialized. You know, that we were told that they were going to, because, you know, there was a, you got to remember the world back then, and I don't even remember what year this was, but Apple sold copy protected music in AAC format.
Right.
This was completely incompatible with everything on the Microsoft side of the fence. So, you know, we said, well, how are you going to, you guys are a big Microsoft shop. I don't understand. You have all this software you put on Windows PCs. You have your own media environment. You support Media Center. I mean, how are you going to do this? And we were told, oh, don't worry. We have all these plans. We're going to do transcoding. We're going to take that music and allow you to use it in the Microsoft stuff. No problem at all. We were told this was all going to happen. And then, of course, I don't think HP understood the deal they were getting into with Apple. And, of course, it didn't really work out. So I think maybe, I bet it was less than 2 years later. They stopped doing all that. But I mean, this goes back a long time. You know, it's not something from the last couple of years. This has been going on for a long time.
Deep Pan says in our chat room, all Apple really has to do is just take down the Apple store and leave it down.
Oh, my God. Listen, CES would come to a standstill because everyone there would be waiting.
We'll all be holding our breath.
I can't tell you the number of times I've been at a Microsoft event and everyone's been watching an Apple keynote on their computers or whatever it is.
All right. Well, there is going to be. In fact, there's a lot of speculation about what Microsoft's going to do at CES. And I have some. I'm going to run some rumors by you. I know you don't know anything. Well, no, that's not quite true.
Well, I don't know much. And I do know some things. But let me tell you.
Hang on.
Okay.
Hang on.
Yes, sir.
Because first we want a word.
Acai.
A word, if you will.
A word from our sponsor.
Acai.
That's how you pronounce it, by the way.
What is that? How did you get that?
Acai.
That's Wikipedia. You search and you find.
Acai.
What do you think about that creepy founder Wikipedia guy that's on the top of all the pages where he's like kind of looking at you like.
I think it's a mistake because I think what happens is he looks so much like Julian Assange that there's some confusion in the marketplace.
Right. I was going to say Ted Bundy, but sure.
Or at least shave next time. You know what? I gave him money and I will always give him money because Wikipedia is, in my mind, the single greatest invention of the 20th century.
Oh.
I mean, wonderful.
I have some problems with Wikipedia, but.
Well, we all do. I mean, it's not perfect. Nothing's perfect, but it is amazing, don't you think? I mean, look.
Well, it is. It's Encyclopedia Galactica and all that, but I think the problem with it is a byproduct of its age. It puts too much emphasis.
Right.
On stuff that gadget and electronics freaks are into.
So?
And not enough. That's...
So?
That's not an encyclopedia. It's like an encyclopedia with a heavy emphasis on tech stuff.
But if you want to know how to pronounce...
In the scope of history, a lot of this stuff
No, I know.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to get off.
No, you're right. That's a good point. No, that's a good point. Hey, our coverage, we are going in, and I am saying we are going in style to CES.
Okay.
I've got, you know, last year we brought, I think, 10 people. I don't even know. I have lost count. And
it was an entourage of sorts.
It's a huge, it's a massive undertaking. We will be in a booth at the in the South Hall. If you're at CES, I would really like to have a place to broadcast from that is not require admission to CES. But we have yet to been able to convince.
Yeah, because you were right inside the door last time. Are you in the same
exact
area?
Spot?
Yeah,
it's
a nice. That's a great in a sense because it overlooks the show floor. Yeah.
It's.
But it would be nice if the people that. Look for badges. We're right behind you.
I'd like to be in the lobby or something, but you know the CEA. You know that's up to them, and we are very grateful because they are giving us a lot. We are also very excited. I'm going to have I don't know 7 or 8 reporters on the floor, and so we're going to be able to, especially Friday afternoon. You want to watch if it works, which is always the caveat with everything I do here at the Twit Cottage. If it works, it's going to be amazing. I mean, you've never seen coverage like this. And I think it deserves it, frankly. I think this is the big event of the year, but we are going to do the same with South by Southwest. In fact, we're going to trumpet with South by Southwest. Dragon Con this fall will be amazing. We're going to do a lot of live coverage. And I have to say the key for me is being able to recoup some of the money on this. And it's our sponsors that make it possible. Our entire CES coverage this year will be brought to you by our friends at Ford. In fact, we've got an exclusive interview with Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, on I think it's Thursday morning, so you want to tune in for that. They've been really great. It's a great sponsorship. It's a great relationship, and I'm happy to do Ford commercials. I drive a Ford Mustang and love it. Of course, the Ford Mustang has that sink in there, and that's one of the things I love. There will be some, I am told. I don't know what they are. Like you, I haven't been briefed, but some big announcements with sink. Alan's going to be keynoting on Thursday. And I think there's some big announcements coming. They've just released an app for the Android and the iPhone that allows you to look up a location on the phone and then send it to the Ford. So cool. So you send it to your car. It's very sophisticated. And you get all sorts of information about traffic before you get in the car using this Ford app. And then send that information to the car. I just did one of the nice features is the personalized vehicle health report for vehicle diagnostics, maintenance, and recall information, and a schedule service online at the Sync Owner Center website. And I just did that. I have that done every 5,000 miles, but every once in a while I just run an extra one just to see. And it tells you, because these cars now are so computerized, everything, it knows everything about what's going on in the car. Of course, you got the free hands, true hands-free calling, the playing music from most MP3 media players. You've got turn-by-turn directions on the Sync, which is great. You just you press a button on the steering wheel. You say, you know, take me to Paul's house. And even though I don't know where you live, it does.
It is a secret location.
Take me to the Bat Cave. Turn-by-turn directions, personalized traffic alerts and weather. And by the way, it will reroute if it sees bad traffic ahead. It'll say, hey, I see bad traffic. Let me reroute you. On my Windows Phone 7, I have a Samsung Focus. I think it does this on all the Windows phones, but I'm not sure yet. But it does it on my Samsung Focus. When a text message comes in, it goes bloop, and I can say, read it to me. And it'll read me the text message. I can even send canned messages in response. It doesn't let you type. It shouldn't let you type. 911 assist if you are typing and the airbags get deployed because you ran into a tree. It will call 911. It'll send you your GPS coordinates, which is pretty amazing. So they know exactly where you are. Send a canned message and let you talk as well. Now, the new My Ford Touch, which is in some vehicles like the Ford Edge, adds an 8-inch touchscreen, 5-way switch pads on the steering wheel, and 3 LCD screens, which actually 2 behind the steering wheel and 1 in the center console. I mean, it is amazing. I just want you to take a look at it. Best way to do this, the Sync is available on Ford and Lincoln vehicles. Some cases it will be optional. Some cases it will be standard. My Ford Touch, again, optional and standard in some. Just go to your local Ford or Lincoln dealer and say, hey, I want to test drive the Ford Sync. Or ask for the My Ford Touch to see the full Monty. It understands 10,000 voice commands? And they're adding, and then watch carefully to see what Ford adds at CES. I think there's some big announcements. I'm told there's some big announcements. And our interview with Alan Mulally, the CEO of Ford, will be on Thursday. We'll also put that out on the Twit Specials feed. Because he's, I think, one of the most interesting guys in right now, not just in the auto industry. I mean, he's really saved Ford, but I mean, really turned this company into something amazing. But also, you know, he's an engineer. He was at Boeing. He designed the 777 cockpit. He's actually quite a neat guy. They're asking me, Dr. Baltazar, not his real name, is asking me in the chat room what time. Eileen's already left for Vegas. Normally I would say, Eileen, I think 9 a.m. on Thursday, but I will, it'll, you know what? Everything's on our calendar. If you go to live.twit.tv and click the calendar button, the whole thing is that we're doing from CES is all on the calendar.
Eileen's so efficient, she'll SMS you the answer to that question in about 10 seconds.
If she's not on the plane, she's pretty good. Will. Yeah. So we will be live at CES starting Wednesday evening with the digital experience. Tom Merritt and Becky Worley, I think, will be doing that. And then from then on, just like lots of coverage. The biggest days will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage. You will see CES better than if you went to CES, frankly. And yes, we'll
yet
podcast
another reason for me to stay home.
I know. Thank you don't need to. Between the you know, the coverage of all the blogs and the live stuff that we're doing, you know, the blogs, you get all the facts.
A lot of companies do the pre-brief stuff, and I get, you know, I've gotten a bunch of information from various people, you know, the past week or so. So,
well, let me ask you, because here's one rumor that I'd love to hear what you think. Microsoft will do a set-top box or announce some sort of television
media center set-top box.
A $200 media center to compete with the Google TVs. That sounds credible.
It is credible because about 7 months ago, Microsoft released a version of its embedded version of Windows that had media center capabilities, enabling this type of thing.
Ah.
And this is funny to me, or kind of an interesting turnaround, because years and years ago when they first showed off, it was called Freestyle at the time, the Media Center UI. You know, I asked them, why didn't you just make a device? Why are we putting this on a PC? You're like, make an Xbox, you know, except that it's Media Center. And that was one of the big decisions they had at the time. And they decided, you know, well, the PC has the power and we understand it. We'll go that route. And I don't think that really worked out. But when you look at a componentized version of Windows where you can really keep out all the stuff that doesn't matter. I think Media Center starts to make a lot of sense, you know, from a set-top box perspective.
It did not press a button.
That's okay.
It just said it all by itself.
It just has a life of its own.
Yes.
I think with, you know, computers today, these Atom-based net-top type computers, you can have a nice system, you know, that's capable of running Media Center. So why not repurpose it for that kind of thing? I think that I've not heard specifically about that one. I think that one has a lot of credibility to it. I think it makes sense.
We know because they've announced that they will be doing tablets based on Windows 7, yes?
Yeah, and what's starting to happen, you know, and I knew this was going to happen too, is that various companies are starting to make announcements about their own products that hint at what's going to happen with the hardware on the tablet side. So, for example, Amazon today released a press release where they said, we are going to support specific features on coming Android and Windows tablets, you know? I thought that was kind of interesting in their Kindle application. So if you run the Kindle app on the iPhone or the iPad, you know, there are certain features that take advantage of the underlying, you know, hardware or whatever, the underlying OS. And they're going to target specific versions of the Kindle app now for those environments as well. And the reason that's important is that, you know, Amazon already has a Windows version of their Kindle software. And if you have a tablet PC, you know, you can, it supports touch. You can flip the pages with your finger just like you do on an iPad. But now they're going to have a more specific version for this new generation of tablets. And I think that that is an implicit acknowledgement that there's going to be a new tablet-based Windows OS coming.
ARM-based.
Yeah.
But they won't have that this week.
No, they won't have it for release this week, but this is CES. You know, so CES is about the coming year. Yeah, right. So it could be months down the road.
Yeah. I think very interesting.
Yeah, the tablet stuff is big. You know, the iPad is an imperfect device, but I think it points the way to this future, you know, where computing is simplified, it's highly mobile, it's highly connected, and so forth. So as I noted in the show notes, you know, Apple's going to sell whatever they sell this year. I mean, it's somewhere 12, 15 million iPads, whatever. That doesn't sound like a big number when you compare it to 350 plus million PCs, but I think we all understand we're hitting an inflection point of sorts where I think the balance is going to shift toward these simpler devices.
Yeah.
I think that Microsoft has a very good chance here, even though everyone is writing them off. And I have to say, though there will be, I mean, hundreds of Android tablets, there's a weird, I don't know, complexity to that UI inconsistency that I think makes it less attractive than an iPad and maybe to something based on Windows just because it's familiar to people. So we'll see. I think this CES is going to be about tablets in a big way. And I think we have to look at this from the other side. You know, next week we'll talk about it again.
You note in your show notes that iPad sold 12 to 14 million in 2010, in less than a year, 9 months, 8 months.
That's speculation. So we know that as of the previous quarter, they had sold 7.5 million.
Jeez.
If they were, you know, 4 million would be a million a week, which I think is the at least what they sold. So we're talking 12 million at least. And if they had a blockbuster quarter, the iPad, which makes sense because of the holidays, they could have sold, I mean, potentially 14 million.
Analysts are saying, based on surveys of stores, that they did, in fact, have a blockbuster Christmas.
Absolutely. Of course they did. Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting because we were talking about this on Twitter, John C. Dvorak and I, because we had a bet. I had guessed that Apple might sell 5 million, and I thought that was the high side.
For the year.
I thought that was the high side. John and others said, oh, you're crazy. 12 to 14 million.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not have guessed that. That's stunning, really. Now, you point out that that's a lot less than the... Well, how many PCs sell in the...
350 million this year.
Okay, so it's a lot less than that.
Not even close, yeah.
But it's 12 million of something that didn't exist a year ago.
Right. I mean, Apple has sold, I forget the number, 200 million, 220 million iPods, you know, since 2001. I mean, this is something that's going to get bigger and bigger. And we've talked about this. I think PCs are going to get simpler and they're going to get closer to the iPad. I think the iPad is going to pick up functionality, get a little closer to the PC, and there's going to be this middle ground. And that this is this new kind of, I call it smart computing or whatever you want to call it, but it's really the type of thing I've always wanted, really. It's like utility computing, you know?
Scourge says something that's interesting. You know, how many of those 350 million PCs were sold to businesses for, you know... we don't know.
Actually,
but I mean,
we don't know, but over half of all PCs now were sold to consumers, not to businesses.
So, okay, so 175 million at least to consumers. That's still 10X.
There isn't a lot being written about this, but when Windows XP shipped in 2001, business computing was by far the biggest market for computers. That is not the case today. That is a major change to that market. And it's the reason, you know, I do this all the time. People look at Microsoft and they say, wow, this company's moving slowly. They're not picking up on these trends and, you know, they enter markets late and all this. But, you know, Microsoft has shifted with the market. And that's what you're seeing, you know, when you see the consumer focus in Windows 7 or in Windows Phone 7 or in Windows 8 coming up, the rationale behind that is that that's where the market is now. So, you know, Apple has always been... Well, and maybe not always, but Apple is largely a company aimed at consumers, especially with now that they're into devices. And they were in the right place at the right time. It's part of their success story. If business computing was still the huge force that it was 10 years ago, this wouldn't be as interesting. You know, the consumer stuff wouldn't be as big as it is, but things have changed.
Is that where Microsoft went wrong with the Windows tablets? Was that they were really essentially business products?
Well, we can criticize that
very well
from a Monday morning quarterback standpoint. Yeah, yeah. But honestly, I think they went after what they thought was going to be the market. You know, Microsoft always goes after what they think is the right market. I mean, they're not as blind as we often think they are. You know, they released a server product a couple of years ago called Microsoft Essential Business Server, which was aimed at medium-sized businesses because we have this small business server that's really successful and people love it. And then we have these, you know, mainstream enterprise servers that are really successful and people love those. Well, who aren't we serving? Those people in the middle. Let's put something that's kind of halfway between those two. And that it's floundered. It was terrible.
Right.
And, I, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we now know that that was a mistake. But looking at it logically before they launched it, yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
Jerry Purnell was saying actually on Twit that he said, don't count Microsoft out. Now, maybe that's because he, like us, is an old timer and has seen the glory that was Microsoft.
It's not just that. You know, I actually do agree with that. It's very easy for me as someone who is, you know, forward leaning to look at Microsoft and say, you're moving too slow. You're never going to do it. You're screwed. This is never going to work. But, you know, it's there's so many factors here. You know, they did do to netbooks what they hoped to do to the tablet market. So there's that. Although I don't think that these things map as closely as I think some people wish they did. You know, the big difference between a netbook compared to a PC and an iPad type thing or a tablet compared to a PC is that the reason the iPad is interesting, really, ultimately, or I shouldn't say the reason, one of the reasons, is this App Store thing. You know, it's the thing that wasn't on the PC. When you look at a netbook, you basically have low-end PC components. It's a PC. If you can get Windows to run on that, that's what they're going to want because the alternative is Linux. But with the iPad, you have the combination of things. You know, great battery life, a nice UI, you know, the touch-friendly stuff. You have this App Store, you know, and that's what people really want. They have an investment in that, and there is a lock-in aspect to that. You know, if companies, especially when companies are smart enough to release an app that is one of those dual design apps that runs on the iPad or the iPhone and native, you know, versions for both, you know, that gets people locked in. You know, it's a wonderful lock-in in a way, but it is a lock-in, you know. So I guess we'll see. I definitely think we shouldn't count them out. I mean, you know, Dimitri, when he was on, you know, talked a little bit about this, and there are some interesting business cases for Windows on a tablet, I guess. You know, it's never taken off in the past, but I think, you know, for all the millions of iPads Apple has sold, there are many, many more hundreds of millions that they didn't sell. And maybe people, now that they understand these things are out there and Microsoft and its partners come up with these PCs that are tablets, maybe that's what they're going to want, a lot of those people. So I think it's not like Apple is going to dominate the tablet market 2-3 years from now. Apple is going to be one of the major players. They might be number one, they might be number two, they might be number three, I don't know. But they're going to be there. The question is sort of how it all falls out when it's all said and done, I guess. It's brand new. It's a new market.
Let's talk more about your predictions. You say, Facebook. Actually, Facebook's a big story this week because Goldman.
I was a little harsh with this one.
But I like it, but the news hook is that Goldman Sachs just invested, and another partner out of Russia invested $500 million.
I love the partner out of Russia part of it, by the way.
Yeah,
you know, talk about mob looking. You know, cigar stomp.
We have chomping. Cash. We need to invest. You want some rubles? We got the rubles. Plenty of rubles.
I'm not convinced that Mark Zuckerberg is the, you know, the industry seer that maybe he thinks he is.
You know what? He's smart though.
Yeah, he's clearly onto something.
And he figured out a way, or his lawyers figured out a way to get another $500 million into, you know, because he didn't need cash
without going public,
and so he keeps control.
Yeah. So you can follow the progression of these traditional tech companies like Apple and Microsoft that went public long, long time ago. And then all these other tech companies, especially during the internet bubble, that went public in that same way in the late 1990s and the early 2000s. But now we're seeing with Google, who went public in a very Dutch auction kind of weird way. And now Facebook, who says, you know what, maybe we'll do this eventually, but we don't need to. We have another way. That in itself, if you think about it, what Google did and now what Facebook is doing is very innovative in its own right, right? I mean, it's a different kind of innovation, but I think it's a clue to the mindset of the people that run these companies and how different they really are. And I think that this should provide some evidence to people that this isn't just the same thing all over again.
So you say Facebook's it.
And here's why. I have Facebook is a disaster in many ways for privacy and all kinds of other things.
User interface.
There's no doubt about it.
Lots of issues.
No doubt about it. But, you know, in my own personal case, I would just say that I have cousins and friends from high school and college that I never see. I never know anything about. In the case of family, someone will get married and I see some cousins I only see once every year, once every 2 years, whatever it might be. And you catch up. And now that we're all on Facebook, I know what's going on in these people's lives to a level I would never know otherwise. And it is the most incredible change ever. And it's wonderful. And I had this conversation with Stephanie's parents, who are firmly against this. I've had this conversation with other people where I say, you have to get on Facebook and you got to do it now. And you're being dumb.
Well, they don't have to do it now. I mean, what if they don't? What's the, there's no penalty for doing it.
No, they need to. The penalty is you die.
You don't exist.
The reason they want to get on it now is because they now have moved away from the home they lived in their entire lives and now live in another part of the country.
This is how you let people know where you are.
Yeah, their children, their relatives are all growing up. And Facebook would be an incredible way for them to keep up with people. And they would experience the same thing that I'm describing, which is, there are these people that are kind of in the background of your lives that are related to you or friends or distant friends or whatever it is. And it can be a regular thing. They don't have to post anything. They don't even have to participate. All they have to do is go and see what's going on. I think it's addictive. But I mean that in a good way, because it's social. I mean, you know, we call it social networking, you know, of course, but
it really is.
This is important. And Facebook has, there are just certain platforms, if you want to call them that, that have just crossed over some line. Netflix, I feel, is one of them. Mm-hmm. I think the Kindle is one of them. And I think that Facebook is one of them. And Facebook obviously is problematic. I don't want to understate that fact. It is absolutely problematic. You have to really kind of take care of that thing. There are browser plugins that can stop all kinds of stuff that Facebook does and all that. And maybe you should look into that stuff. But I really strongly feel that people need to be on Facebook, especially people who are non-technical, because this is a way that you can keep up with people that you care about. And I think that's more important than I can even possibly state. It's hugely important.
You don't agree with Real Files in our chat room that Facebook is AOL 2.0? Maybe it is. Maybe that's
the, how is it AOL 2.0? You had to pay
AOL
to be on
used
AOL.
To be the pay place you had to be. You're right.
No, but AOL free. Was about getting on the internet. AOL was about a walled garden. It was not about keeping in touch with other people. This is a completely different thing. People would call Facebook AOL as a way to condescend to it and make it seem less important than it is, and make it seem like something for newbies or whatever. This is not about technology. Facebook is an important service because it keeps you in touch with people. It's, you know, every product that comes down the pipeline, there's some reason for it. And whoever makes it tries to make it seem like that's important. You know, you can get your music on the go. You know, whoopee-doo. I mean, you can keep in touch with people that you care about. Guess what? That actually is important. It's important. And like I said, Facebook has problems. But we got to get over this, you know, technology mindset. You know, Facebook's important. It just is.
Yeah. No, in fact, I'm one of those deniers, the Facebook deniers, that has had to turn around. Initially, I joined it because, hey, you can't be a tech journalist and not have a Facebook account, just because, not for publicity, but because I have to cover it. I have to talk about what they're doing, and it's kind of a weird experience of, you know, everybody's saying, well, did you see what Facebook's up to? And I said, well, no, I don't have an account. But then I have to admit, after recreating the account, and doing it right this time, where the people who are my friends are just my actual real
life. You know what Facebook really needs? If they could solve a lot of problems right now by having some kind of notation. I don't want to call it favorites, but it would be something like friends and family.
Yeah, they need groups.
We're really friends.
Yes.
And where these guys are propagated to the top.
Yep.
So that when you look at your feed, what you're seeing is really the stuff.
They know that. This was what Groups was trying to solve, and it didn't. Mark Zuckerberg famously said, nobody wants to make lists, but we know we need to do this kind of, somehow, categorization. It's just that it's a kind of a typical problem.
It's a simple thing. Unfortunately, a lot of people already have hundreds of friends and all that, but what you want is something where you accept a friend request, or you have sent out a friend request, and you want to just check a box where you say, this person is really important to me.
I agree.
And that stuff should be at the top.
Yeah, no, I definitely
agree. It's still great. You know, I'm not sure I would say it's great, but I think you have to be there,
and I do find it useful. I understand what you're saying.
The way I would say it is it's important, and the benefits vastly outweigh the problems, and there are problems. And again, I didn't want to be very clear about that, but, you know, we were joking over time about the, you know, dozen years or whatever it was that I maintained my supersite for Windows using this ancient technology and all this stuff, but the other thing I did was, when I lived in Phoenix and we were having our first child, I set up a personal website, again, manually created, because back then you didn't really have any other option. the idea was that I would keep my parents who lived in another part of the country and my wife's parents who lived in another part of the country could see what was going on with their first grandchild and all that stuff. And then when we moved back to Boston, I thought, well, I won't have to do this again because I won't have to keep doing this because, you know, we're moving back. They'll be able to see the kid and the second kid and it's no problem. But the way, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you move and then the people who live in Arizona are like, what are you doing? I want to keep up with your, you know, see what's going on. So in the pre-Facebook days, this is the, here, there's a site out there that I've been maintaining since 1998, more poorly lately because it's a time suck. And I'm looking at Facebook and it's not quite what I want, but I'm wondering if I shouldn't just be putting that stuff on Facebook because that's where all those people that want to know this stuff, my friends and family, that's where they are. Right? So I could post pictures of my kid's birthday party on my personal website and no one will ever see it. But when I post them on Facebook, my cousins see it, my parents and my wife's parents, hopefully if they ever join, you know, the guys I went to college with will see it, all that stuff. People who just never would know to go and look. Now it's just there. It's a different thing. So I just think it's important. And I know I'm going to get a lot of criticism for that, but because I do hate the things that are wrong with it. And there are serious problems still. But I think they will fix that stuff over time. And I just think you need to deal with it regardless.
Deal with it. Yeah. What can I say? You know, my wife, who has never had a Facebook account nor a Twitter account, finally had to join it so that she could see pictures that somebody wanted to share with her, and that was the only place she could go. I mean, there's this real coercive side to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so what I did is I set a Facebook account up for her, just turned everything to off, you know, kind of everything super private. You can't search for her. You can't ask to be her friend, anything. So she now has access to Facebook. And Facebook pages.
But doesn't get the stuff in yet.
She said, the reason I didn't join, I don't want these old boyfriends to contact me.
Right. Well, so there is that aspect of it, I guess. But
there really is. You could be plagued by stalkers on Facebook.
Sure. So for people like you and I, who obviously have hundreds of ex-girlfriends. No, I mean, who are...
you know, that's it. Really, the truth is, it's not a problem for me. I don't have...
Okay. Well,
but for her, it's a significant problem.
Okay. Well, no. What I mean is, for people like you and I who have are publishing information online, otherwise,
yes,
we're out in the public.
Yes.
Facebook is just another place, so we get this immediately. There's no problem, you know. But there is a weirdism. I will say, my wife joined Facebook, you know, whenever that was, a year and a half ago, whatever. And I have to tell you, you know, the first couple of times, and I still get this occasionally, my wife will post something. A little witty question that her friends can answer, or so whatever it is, you know. And I look at it and my heart stops for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, because she's out there. And, you know, usually I'm the one who's out there. You know, and I don't begrudge her. It's not that. But I'm looking at this thing and I'm thinking.
Are you a little jealous, Paul?
No. It's not that. It's actually more of a protective thing, I guess is. Highway, I would describe it. I feel weird about it. You know, I don't mind being as transparent as I am, but my kids, my wife, I don't know. A little different. So you get used to it.
Yeah, somebody's
plus, it gives me a chance to have my own cutting and witty comments to her be public so I can just, you know, I can just kind of post in there as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's... You know, again, it's a mixed bag of sorts, of course. But I just think it's so important.
Somebody in your chat room is saying that Facebook changed their instant personalization settings today to make your instant personalization settings completely public. This might be something you want to check.
Let me give you, you know, you could write a book about all of the insidious stuff that Facebook does. One of the things that it does to me that it drives me crazy is I have very rarely gone and tried to friend anyone on Facebook myself. But I get a lot of friend requests.
Right.
And this thing drives me crazy. They actually had, so you have legitimate friend requests and then you have suggestions. I don't ever want to see suggestions, but I sort of understand why they're there.
Yeah.
They've actually mixed and matched suggestions into requests. So if I'm not paying attention,
ooh,
I'm clicking down. It's like confirm, 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 add as friend. Wait a minute, what?
Huh?
And what I just did was send a request to someone that I didn't intend to send. And I really don't like that.
Well, that's what I don't like about Facebook in general, is it really is a coercive environment where they have a very strong vested interest in having universal sign up, and they push it.
Oh, yeah.
And they push it in clever ways, not just obvious ways, but in almost, dare I say it, sneaky ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I don't like.
I agree.
But as you point out, actually, I'm going to read your quote because you softened it.
All right.
Social networking. This is bullet point number 4 in 2010 in review and what it means for 2011. Bullet point, social networking. I'm tired of Luddites and holdouts. You need to be on Facebook now. If you're not, you do not exist.
Yeah.
It's true.
You are a non-person.
It's like not being in Google, a Google search, if you're a website. This is where people go.
It is. Right.
And increasingly, this is where unsophisticated, and this is the most important point, where unsophisticated people go to find you.
Okay.
That's where family and, well, this is what you're really saying is, this is where family and friends go because they don't, like you and I, have web pages and Flickr and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They go to Facebook. That's where it all happens. So you got to do that.
Yep.
Hey. It still scares the hell out of me.
And maybe it should, but I've stated my case, Leo.
Yes, you have. Day after tomorrow, Apple's App Store goes live. That's one of the things that's going to take all the steam out of CES. They timed that perfectly.
Well, maybe. That's an interesting little bit of timing, and I'm sure this is a beta release, right? This is the,
But it's public, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So beta is just there to let them off the hook if it's not so good.
Right.
But this is, in my opinion, exactly where Apple wants to be with all app sales. They want 30% of all sales. They want to own it. They want to control it. They want to control all updates. Yes. And isn't Microsoft eyeing
this as genius?
It's genius.
Yeah. I would describe it as genius, except that they claimed for years they were never going to do this.
Like Facebook, it's brilliant and I hate it.
I can't say that I hate it. The one thing that this accomplishes is that complaint I've had about Windows, which is it gives you a single place, and if you have an account, and the purchase is tied to your account.
Right.
And if you wipe out your operating system and come back, this thing is associated, you bring it down, and you're good to go. Now, Mac apps like Windows apps are somewhat monolithic in the sense that some of them can be humongous, and it's not quite as seamless as installing apps on an iPad or whatever, but it's logical and it needs to be there.
It'll be pretty seamless.
Well, and they're establishing rules that are going to change the way that Mac apps are created.
No demos.
I love that.
No betas.
And it's tied to an account, not to a single PC or Mac.
That I like. You're right. People will like that if they do that.
Yes.
That's actually a very good point.
There needs to be, for the same reason that Google's App Store for Chrome and Chrome OS makes so much sense. This makes so much sense. Obviously, Microsoft has one on Windows Phone. They have one that no one knows about for games for Windows because who cares? But there should be one for Windows, and there should be one for the web. Microsoft is the company that could kind of make that happen. But I think it would be foolish for IE9 not to be supported by an app store. But on the other hand, now you have something to compare it to in the Chrome store. And how do you deal with that? Is it possible for the simpler form of Chrome OS or Chrome apps to work in IE9 in a similar fashion? And can you do that without Google suing you or whatever it is? I mean, I think something needs to happen there. And maybe Microsoft should be talking to Google to say, hey, look, let's make this stuff open. Let's make this work in all browsers that support these standards.
There's an opportunity for Microsoft. Do you think that's the kind of thing they might do?
Yeah. Yeah, they have to. The app stores are it. You can't launch a platform today without being supported by an app store. When you do, you get stuff like WebOS, which went nowhere. Now, I don't mean there wasn't an app store, but there was an app store with nothing in it. It's funny, Apple stumbled into this. They didn't really want to do this on the iPhone. They wanted to control it. But when they opened that thing up, it was unleashed. They unleashed the monster, the genie, or however you want to say it. I mean, this is just a fact now. You need this. It's part of the deal. And I think app stores are huge.
Well, here it comes. Get ready. Huge or not.
Well, there better be app store talk in this keynote. I mean, you could do this little buzzword bingo thing for the Ballmer keynote.
Oh, I like that. So let's
see. There's got to be a list of things that this guy talks about. And that if he doesn't touch on any of them, this is how you can know they're out to lunch.
Right.
Because this stuff has, they have to at least talk about it. You know, they don't have, I don't mean it has to be released like this week, but you know, what Apple did with the App Store and the Mac, I think is very smart because they intended this to be part of their next OS release line, which is coming out, I think, later this year, right? But they decided to release the beta version as a standalone thing for the current version. Now, Apple's done this in the past. They did it with Boot Camp. Remember, it was a beta for the prior version of Mac OS X at the time. I think they did it with Safari, I think, if I'm not mistaken, things like that. Microsoft needs to do the same thing. You know, Microsoft tends to think in these rolling schedules. You know, IE 9 is going to come out 2 years after IE 8, and they think they're moving quick. You know, Windows 8 is going to come out 3 years after Windows 7, and they think that's enough. Just fine. And I got to tell you, these big releases are all very cute and everything, but you need to add features over time. And I think that an app store for Windows, if they intend to have one in Windows 8, needs to ship sometime this year, even in just beta form. For Windows 7, Windows Vista, you know, maybe even Windows XP. They'll never do that, I don't think, but that's something, you know, to look for.
Interesting. I think the word I would use, it wouldn't use it publicly, wouldn't put it on the bingo or anything, but for you and me and our audience, the word is iterative. The ability to iterate quickly has now, it's not just, by the way, in software.
This is my biggest complaint.
It's in books. You were just talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, this is why Dead Tree material is being out, is going to soon be outsold by Electronic Material. The ability to quickly update, change, fix, iterate. It's what's made web-based software so strong. I guess an app store does help. It will allow a developer to iterate faster. Although, you know, what we've seen in the Apple App Store and the iOS App Store is Apple is a bottleneck to all this because their approval process takes so long.
They're a bottleneck. Okay. And by the way, I sort of agree with that.
And on Android,
there are also 200,000 apps in that store or whatever it is.
No, there's more than that. Android has 200,000 now, though. Oh, but what's interesting is I will get updates for Android apps sometimes daily, they iterate very rapidly, whereas you're not going to see that in Apple.
So my
– That's good.
This is kind of a side story, but you know, my kids both came into some form of money because of the holidays. And my son went to my wife first, and she said, go talk to your dad. And he came in and he said, I want to buy an iPod Touch, which of course was like getting knifed in the heart. And I said, why? You know, they already have iPod Touches. They both have a first generation iPod Touch.
The fourth generation, sure.
Yeah. And the reason they have them is when we go on these trips, I can load games on them and they can, you know, they play games. The kids get bored when they're on a plane.
Yeah, no, they're great. My seventh grade nephew an iPod Touch for Christmas through the moon. I am now Uncle, Uncle
you're
God.
The man. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I said, Mark, you don't really need an iPod Touch. You have one. What could there be in this new version that makes it different for you? And he said, it has this FaceTime video chat thing. And of course, Mark is deaf.
Oh, that's
phone conversations are difficult for him, but in-face conversations are great.
Does he? Right. He could do sign language in.
They don't do sign language, but he can read lips.
Oh, he can read lips.
Right.
Oh, well, that's amazing.
So I felt like a jerk, you know. Yeah. So I said, okay. I didn't think he was going to come up with anything.
Really good.
I'm standing there like the executioner. And I'm thinking, I'm going to shoot this down so fast.
Right.
And then he says, I want to do video chat. And I said, oh, geez. Okay. So anyway, long story short, my daughter, seeing that my son was getting an iPod, demanded that she also get an iPod, and they both had enough money. They bought their own iPod.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Anyway, the reason I'm telling you this story is I've had to, you know, I put iTunes on the computer and put all my apps back. I haven't really been using that stuff a lot lately.
Oh, boy.
Load up their iPod, you know, their iPods with these stupid games we have. Okay. But, you know, the one thing I hate about iTunes and the App Store and the way it's implemented, and this is sort of like the Facebook thing where this is a crucial thing, they got to fix some things, is you could look at iTunes every single day. And on my computer, I could have anywhere from 4 to 20 apps that need to be updated every day, every single day.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. So, of course, these apps I hadn't looked at in a long time, and I downloaded
tons
a few new
of
ones.
Updates.
Oh, my God. I spent half the day downloading apps. And it was funny. You'll notice this because you're a Mac guy, and I'm sure you pay attention to this kind of stuff. You know when Apple was not, like the guys at Apple were not working. from December 23rd until yesterday.
Yes.
And the reason you know that is there wasn't a single damn app update until today.
Now they're all there. Yep.
They were gone for that entire time because it was the there were no app update.
The guy, there's this guy who approves all apps, and and he, you know, he broke his toe, so
right, the
no
one
updates.
Guy. Yeah, you know, this actually is something, broke his thumb, so he couldn't press the accept or deny button.
This, exactly. He broke his thumb.
They actually use like an arcade machine from the 80s that just has those two.
It's interesting because Android has added in, it started in 2.2, the ability to check a box that says automatically updated, which is how they're responding to the fact that there are, in fact, sometimes.
You've also reminded me of the other thing I hate about this App Store, which is when you're on the PC or the Mac, I suppose, and you update the apps in iTunes, no problem. You click, yes, I want them all updated, no problem. When you're on the iPod, the iPhone, or the iPad, and you do the, you get the update notification on that thing, you have to type in your password. Even if you have a password to log onto the device, you still have to type in your damn password. That drives me nuts. You don't have to do that in Windows Phone, by the way. That's one of the things I kind of like about it. It's, you know, I obviously you should always have a password on these things, but, and I do on my phone as on my devices, but I think if you have a device, a password on the device, there should be a checkbox there and says, never ask me for this again. And there should be one automatically update if on Wi-Fi or however you want to set it up. They'll get there.
You'll get there. Someday.
Give me a topic. I can complain about anything.
Mindshare. Apple and Google killed Microsoft in 2010. What's the problem? This, I'm just reading your notes.
I can't believe I left the Fox News reference in there. So I'm looking at it now and I'm like, I can't.
Okay, Microsoft needs better mindshare in 2011. In the age of Fox News and soundbites, perception is the new reality.
And you can say, we live in a world where you can say something and it becomes a fact.
It's true. Now, somebody in the chat room pointed out, and I think this is really true. I'm sorry. I think it was Echelon who said, how is it that Microsoft, which is dominant in its markets, is treated by so many people as, you know, fading
a complete laggard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Technologically retarded.
Yeah.
And retarded in many ways, you know, from a strategy perspective, whatever it is. That's a good question.
It's perception is reality. You said it.
I don't want to speak to the entire company. You know, Microsoft is a giant company with all kinds of different divisions. They have approximately, I think, 300,000 vice presidents or whatever it is. And it's a big place. So they have PR companies that service them. You know, the biggest one is Wagner Edstrom, but there are actually others. And I believe the way it works is that each team could pick, you know, who handles the PR or whatever. PR varies wildly. I mean, the guys that I deal with and the Windows team and the Internet Explorer team were fantastic. Windows Phone, you know, I think given the slowness of what's happening there, I think they could be doing a little better job communicating what the plans are there, because the whole world is sitting there with the, you know, their hand in the air. See, okay, we're waiting, you know, and God, it's like you can hear a cricket chirping over there. I don't know what's going on. Now, I say that right before CES, and it's probably going to be an explosion of news. But honestly, I think the one example I can give that everyone will recall is that when Apple was killing Microsoft over Windows Vista with both real facts and imagined facts in those ads,
right,
Microsoft did nothing for a year, nothing. They just let it sit there and register in the hearts and minds of all those people watching TV. They did nothing. And it was the biggest mistake maybe that they've ever made. They just didn't respond in any way, shape, or form. Now, a year later, they finally got their act together and they, you know, they hired people to look into this and how are we going to do this? And they came up with that Mojave Project thing, which was classic because they showed people Windows Vista, called it something else and said, what do you think of this? And they loved it. And you have to wonder how different the world might have been if they had just done this from the get-go. But
was that a good ad, really? Because didn't that just tell everybody, oh, we've stumbled, in effect?
What it really did was prove a point, I guess, is in that, you know, there's reality and there's perception. And when it comes to Windows Vista, Microsoft lost big on perception.
Right.
And lost. They just lost.
Yeah.
Windows Vista is the butt of jokes and always will be. It's the Windows millennium.
It is.
Of the new millennium, if you will. And whether it deserves it or not, that is now a fact.
Yeah, that's not relevant, is it? Yeah.
Well, but we all remember that. And if you look back at 2010, you know, Google and Google and Apple both generated unbelievable news. Apple surpassed Microsoft in market cap, and so forth. You know, Google has this giant dartboard that has every market that Microsoft's in, and it is covered in darts today. They are not afraid to go after anything that Microsoft does, up to and including its most core of markets, operating systems. It's amazing. This is a world that did not exist 10 years ago when people, or companies, I should say, were still afraid of this company, or still afraid of Microsoft. This is a completely different place, and Microsoft needs to respond to that fact.
Isn't some of it a ballistics issue that it's the trend. It's how... And it's interesting, too, because Microsoft...
Hey, Apple is older, or is as old as Microsoft.
I'm not saying it's
Apple
age.
Apple is seen as a startup in many ways. This exciting new company that makes stuff for the new generation. You know, there is a laser-like intensity to Apple that people just rally around. There is a plotting IBM-ness to Microsoft that people just want to distance themselves from.
It's not
this
exciting.
This is something...
It's not shiny.
Right. This is something that this company needs to address.
And then they, for every Kinect, which is a huge win and really should be something that Microsoft's, you know, parading, there's the Kin. You know, you got Kinect and you got Kin. And that's another problem. Apple, because of its laser focus, doesn't release as many new products as quickly as Microsoft does. And Microsoft, as a result, has more flops.
Yeah, you can't go to Microsoft and say the answer is to be smaller.
No,
I mean
that's not going to happen. Well, you could say
so far. You know, I mean,
you could say break up. You could say, as many have said for years.
And I hate to keep going back to that, but I've always said this, and maybe I always will. I always felt like this company, its shareholders and its customers, all would have been better off in 2000.
Here's what Jerry Parnell said, and I thought this was really interesting. He said maybe Bill Gates will come back. Bill's got to be sitting there going, what have they done to my company?
It works great for Gateway, you know. So
when Ted Waite came back, yeah.
Yeah. There are more examples of that not working than there are examples of that working.
But how many Bill Gates are there in the world?
Are we convinced that Bill Gates is really that great? I mean, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. It was Bill Gates' Microsoft that got into trouble with antitrust around the world. So I know what you're saying.
Well, Gates took it to the edge.
Yeah, so
pushed it to the limit.
Microsoft and I think now Apple, and this is it'll be interesting to see how Apple deals with this. Microsoft was run as a startup all the way through that antitrust trial. And it wasn't until the European Union, but it started with the American antitrust trial and then the EU one, where they finally changed their ways. Now, of course, they overcompensated, right? Which is how the Windows Vista thing happened and how their non-response to Apple happened and all that stuff. So they obviously... they overcompensated. But when you run a company that is a ginormic, industry force, as if it was a little startup, you know, you're going to run afoul of the law and all kinds of other things. Now, Apple is run as a very, you know, all these groups are very small. It's run as a very small company. It's a huge corporation. It generates unbelievable revenues and so forth and has very successful products. Their tactics are cute when you're small. It's going to be interesting to see whether or when antitrust regulators or whatever look at the markets that Apple will eventually dominate or is starting to dominate, like digital music or content distribution, MP3 players, perhaps smartphones and so forth. So we will see. And maybe they just don't get there. I have to say, when I look to the future from a technological market, I guess a technology market standpoint, I see this in browsers, but I also see this in other markets. I don't think we're necessarily always going to have that one dominant player. Like Facebook is clearly the dominant player in social networking. Google is clearly the dominant player in search, but not so much in other markets. You know, I think the important markets of the future, whether we're talking about operating systems that run on PCs, on devices, on smartphones, whether we're talking about web browsers, is going to be split up a lot more equitably than these things were in the past. You know, there's not going to be that one guy and then everyone else. There's going to be one, two, three companies that all have decent enough share that they all need to be dealt with in some way, you know. And how Microsoft responds to that is how or if it has a future, you know, because I think it's used to dominating and it's used to I have to. Can you pause for one moment?
Yes.
I apologize. I will be right back.
We will be right back.
So all set? Can we go back?
Yes. I should have warned you that that was a possibility.
No problem.
I'm doing this focus group Saturday and Sunday, and Microsoft is shipping 10 computers to my house, and six of them just arrived. So,
holy cow.
You know, for use in this group and study. So,
is it too late if somebody's in the Dedham area to sign up for the focus group?
They can contact me and say it's pretty full. I mean, it's pretty full. We can accommodate 5 people at a time, and we're doing 5 hours each day. And it's pretty full. Saturday, cool. Especially, is very. Yeah.
Now, you can't talk about what you're testing, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Okay. Not Windows 8.
Not exactly, but it's based. Yeah, I can't really say much.
Okay.
But people who show up will have the distinct pleasure of meeting my brother.
Are you testing your brother? TM, Microsoft
no, I should.
Corporation.
I should. Reserved.
All right, let's continue on. Actually, you know what I'd like to do is take a break mm-hmm. for the Audible ad right now.
Okay.
And come back with more. Paul Thurrott, Leo Laporte, talking about CES coming up. I was just running through the CES schedule. We've got a lot of stuff planned. Wow! One of the big stories at CES will be Sandy Bridge, the new Intel chipset. It's based on the existing i3, 5, and 7, but it has built-in graphics and, I'm hearing, built-in digital rights and management.
This is the thing we've been talking about all year, where, yes, there will be tablets this year. You don't want to buy one of those. You want to wait till 2011 when this new Intel thing ships, right. And that's what it is.
This is
new chipset, integrated chipset. Yeah.
You're not worried about the copy protection?
Not worried about it?
Well, I guess.
Well, what do you mean? It's probably in every PC you own.
Anyway, already it'll be hardware supported, and this is a kind of a requirement of companies like Sony and all the movie studios. And frankly, this is one of the reasons Android's does not have Netflix. And one of the reasons, if you don't build in this, I mean, not that I'm a fan of it, I hate it, but if you don't build it in, they will not come. I saw another announcement. It's very interesting. Many of the TV manufacturers are going to update their remotes to have a Netflix button. Talk about a winner.
It's
the
unreal.
Netflix button.
Yeah.
They're dominant. Reed Hastings has to be just jumping up and down with that one. All right, we have more with Paul Thurrott, Windows Weekly, but to let us mention Audible.com. By now, you surely know about Audible.com if you've listened to the show. Paul and I are major Audible fanatics. Audible is the source of audio books for your Zune, your Kindle, and of course, all your iOS devices as well. Audible.com, and you can take a look at more than 75,000 titles now. More than 75,000 titles at audible.com. And I'm going to tell you how to get a book for free. All you have to do is go to audible.com/windows. And you will be signing up for that gold account. That's a book a month subscription. I do the 2 book a month. I think it's a very good idea to do a book a subscription. It's much more affordable. And you believe me, you will be reading a book a month at least. And here's the beauty of doing that now. First month is free. That means your first book is free, and it's yours to keep forever. You can cancel at any time, so you, in effect, are getting a free book. And so many choices. This is the hard part. You go to audible.com, and it's like, whoa, there's a lot of stuff here. So, Paul, you got a recommendation for us?
I do.
Fire away, my friend.
It's called Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It by Gary Tobbs.
Is this part of your New Year's resolution?
It is, yeah. This is a great book, and I just finished this the other day. My wife's reading it now.
I'm going to have to read this.
I would say it is it's a companion piece of sorts to the Michael Pollan stuff, if you read any of that.
I love his books.
But what it does, and what I love about it is, as over the years, I've done things. I spent 5 years recently going to a gym, working out with personal trainers. I still do play basketball twice a week.
I do all of that stuff.
I do all this stuff. Yeah. And I've always had this problem with the unanswered questions, it's the conventional wisdom that everyone repeats like it's a fact about dieting and losing weight and exercising and the roles that exercise plays and losing weight, if any, and all this stuff. And the reason that this book is important and is excellent is that it just dispenses with all of that baloney and explains why all of that stuff is in fact completely wrong. And that this conventional wisdom that we all adhere to about losing weight and gaining weight and all that stuff really dates back to World War II and is not, it's something that we as a people, and I don't mean we just Americans, but the world, everyone, you know, health experts dating back hundreds of years understood. And then we just dispensed with all of it starting in World War II.
Yeah.
And it just, it really blows through the bologna, you know, and
Literally, I doubt you eat, you're not going to eat much bologna after you read this.
No. Processed foods are bad.
Yeah.
But this is fantastic. And I can sort of boil it, you know, down that the emphasis here is ridding yourself of carbohydrates, especially certain kinds of carbohydrates. And that notion obviously has been around, but you know, Atkins in the early 1970s and so forth, and the Southby's diet and all that stuff. But really what this is the science behind it and why it's right. And it is right. And when I said to you, I know I'm going to lose weight. I do know I'm going to lose weight. I am going to lose weight.
Wow. Do you want to state a goal?
Amount of weight?
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous about that. Someone asked me to do that on Facebook.
So you just lose a pound and you'd win.
Yeah, I've already lost more than that, but I would say that, no, I mean, really, I don't know. The reason I'm still, and I'm hedging in a way that I've always hedged about this kind of stuff, because I hate to say this kind of stuff publicly. I have never succeeded at anything like this, which is why.
Me neither.
Me coming out and saying, I am going to do this is such a big deal for me. I would obviously be ecstatic to lose 20 or 30 or whatever pounds, but I think realistically speaking, I need to lose more like 50 pounds.
I'm going to read this, and I think that it is not the Atkins diet, but it does talk about the kind of the simplistic calories in, calories out equation isn't exactly right. It's not just about eating less and exercising more. It's eating more of the right kinds of food too, right?
Yeah, and actually, if you want, I can explain to you why calories in, calories out is complete baloney and pretty easily.
Okay. If you can do it quickly, I mean, this is an ad. So
let's say that the average average person gains 2 pounds a year.
Yes.
Over the course of their adult life.
Right.
So when you're 20 years old and you weigh 165 pounds and now you're 40 years old, and I can't do math, but you weigh whatever you weigh at the end of that. Okay. So what would you have, so obviously if you had eaten differently, maybe you wouldn't have gained that weight. If you exercise more, if you did more of this, if you sat around less, whatever it is. But like, what are we talking calorically? Like what amount of difference could you make on a daily basis over the course of those 20 years to not have gained that weight? And what it amounts to on a daily basis is 1/4 of a slice of bread every single day with nothing on it.
Right.
That's the difference. And it is impossible for any human being, given the variances in their schedules, their exercise, the types of foods they eat and all that kind of stuff, to be that accurate, right? To be able to make that change. And yet, despite all those variables, you have very cleanly and easily gained exactly the same amount of weight every year over year, you know? And that's kind of the, you know, and this is the thing, when I would sit in the gym and talk to the nutritionist, or I would talk to someone about, you know, a doctor about weight, they would always say, it's very simple. You take in a certain amount of calories, you expend a certain amount of calories. If you take in less than you expend, you will lose weight. And you know what? That actually doesn't happen. So anyway, I think this book is,
I'm going to read it. I'm excited. I just added it to my list. Yeah. Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. Now, this is just one of a lot of books.
Yeah.
Notice though, Audible does some great things. This one just came out, but you already see ratings, customer reviews, publisher's summary, and an audio extract, so you can kind of hear what it's going to sound like. I think this is really a great way to browse. It's kind of the new kind of bookstore. And if you're not a member, I invite you to try it free by going to audible.com/windows. This could be your first book. It could be free. Yours to keep forever.
And we talked about this before, but the greatest thing Audible ever did was they're now making custom apps for mobile platforms.
Oh, the Android app and the iPhone app.
Such a better way to enjoy audiobooks than, you know, doing that thing where you manage the computers and devices you have that can connect. You know, you just install the app and you don't worry about that stuff. You don't go through iTunes. You don't sideload them into your Zoom or whatever. Well, of course, in the Zoom, you have to because it's the only option. But hopefully on Windows phone soon as well, you'll be able to have this custom app. And it's really just
that's the rumor I hear. It's coming soon.
Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, it is happening.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about? Data usage problems on Windows Phone 7? I haven't heard about this. What's the story there?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on this. You know, this was something that had come up through my Windows Phone Secrets blog. I've been blogging fairly regularly about the phone, obviously, but every month what I do is I provide an update about my data usage on Windows Phone. And I have it going back to the previous, you know, several months that I used the iPhone. And when I had the iPhone, the data usage was, you know, your typical little up and down, you know, it kind of focused or was set in a certain, you know, range of data usage. And then you hit the Windows Phone, and at first Windows Phone is nothing. And then it's just been going up month after month. And I think that in December, I finally leveled off. I don't think it actually went up yet again, but it really kind of shot through the roof there. And when I wrote about that, I mean, dozens and dozens of people would chime in the comment section and say, yeah, I'm experiencing the same thing. And I've also gotten emails from people separately who don't know about the blog or don't read the blog and who've written me and said, you know, I'm seeing this crazy thing where, you know, I have a 200 megabyte AT&T subscription and I'm getting these warning messages, you know, 4 days into the month that I've hit my limit and I'm going to have to start paying for data. And what the heck is going on? I don't use it for anything. So it's pretty clear in having conversations through the comment section of the blog or in email with people that there's some kind of bug in Windows Phone with regards to how it uses data, in which I mean that even when Wi-Fi is enabled in many cases, it appears that things are transmitted over 3G, not over Wi-Fi. Now, one of the things I've seen mentioned again and again is you get some update or you try to download an app that's just over a certain size. I think it's 20 megabytes or maybe it's 200 megabytes. And if it's over that size, Windows Phone actually won't let you download it over 3G. You have to be connected to Wi-Fi and you get a message to that effect. So you click, okay, yeah, I'll connect to Wi-Fi, and you connect to Wi-Fi and then you go back to re-download and it says, oh, okay, now. But once you've started downloading it, sometimes it goes off of Wi-Fi and just uses 3G, it appears. Sometimes you just leave the area where the Wi-Fi is. It will continue that download over 3G. Once it's okay to download it, it doesn't care how it does it. And a lot of times with a big enough app, you could suck up your whole month right there, you know, if you're not careful, especially the way these things are tiered these days.
Yeah.
But there are other possible culprits. And I just heard from the Windows Phone guys about this. They're going to investigate it. But, you know, Marketplace is a big one, whether it's sitting there doing stuff. You know, like I said, 3G is being used even when Wi-Fi is enabled, which I've definitely seen. In fact, I've seen things where you connect to a network like my home network. It should always just connect. But it's using 3G even though I'm sitting at home. I've definitely seen that happen. And I don't know why, but, you know, it does. A number of people now have told me that Wi-Fi is not enabled on Windows Phone when the screen is off. So you could start a download, click the little power button on the side. That thing will keep downloading in the back. It's doing it in 3G, not on Wi-Fi. Mm. And then people with AT&T bills, this one I'm starting to wonder if this is something else, but have said, you know, you can look at your bill. And you can see when it posts all these crazy data transmissions, and a lot of them seem to happen 2-3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, when people aren't using their phone. But I've had other people tell me that that's just how AT&T posts things. You know, they'll do it for the previous 24 hours or whatever, or some time period, and they'll post them at night or whatever. So that may be nothing, but Microsoft is going to look into this and, you know, we'll see. We'll see if it's real. You know, it's like a lot of stuff, you know, you think you see it and maybe it's not really happening the way you think. But I can say, I mean, my data usage has shot up dramatically. And I'm grandfathered in. I have the unlimited plan from the early iPhone days. And I still pay for that and I still get it. So it's not a problem for me. But it was something I started doing because I knew it was going to be a problem for people on these tiered data plans. And, you know, is it okay? Is 200 megabytes enough? Do I need to go to 2 gigabytes? You know, those are the only two options.
Where can you find out what your usage is? Do you have to use the AT&T app to do that?
Yeah, there's two ways you can do it. Yeah, so AT&T has an app like they do on the iPhone, which is excellent, by the way. They have an app for Windows Phone where you can go in and look on the fly and it will tell you what the usage is. Every day you can go and check and you can see how it goes up. That's nice because it's on the phone. But they also have an AT&T for all their problems, real imagined. AT&T has a great website, wireless.att.com. You log in and you can go back in time, see your usage. You can see usage in very specific slices and all that. You can see data related to your talk time and your messages and all that stuff too. They actually have a really nice setup. So assuming you're on AT&T, I can't speak to what the experience is like on
T-Mobile.
Not T-Mobile or yeah. whatever, but yeah. I think AT&T has a nice, they have a nice setup.
Let me hang up on you and call you back because you're starting to break up.
Okay.
Be right back.
I have an unfortunate video image thing. Oh, I guess it's gone.
Oh, we didn't leave it up.
No, it's in Skype, you know, where I'm right. I'm actually saying, actually that should be working. Why is it like that? It's still frozen.
Yeah, press the blue button again. A couple of times maybe.
The blue button.
The video button, isn't it blue on yours?
Is it? There it is. Can you see me?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and you turned it off again. Turn it on again.
I did?
Yep.
Damn it.
Damn it.
How about that?
Doctor, not a Skype engineer.
Okay. Is that better?
That's a much better. That's a much better. So,
Yes.
Just wondering why that's not disappearing. So, by the way, I noticed a new poster. We mentioned it earlier. What is that? Mm-hmm. The new Windows XP Media Center Edition. I like that.
I should have warned you about this one, too, because I wanted, I'm changing my office. So I said, I should put the new poster up there. I have, it's not new, it's years old, but I have all these Microsoft posters, and I have a couple of internal posters from different products and so forth, and I thought I would put something new up. But I, when I took down the other one, I had actually Velcroed that to the wall, and I was trying to find Velcro because I thought that's a pretty good way to adhere something, actually, but I couldn't find any, so... I temporarily used box tape, bunch of box tape.
So there's put big that holes thing up. Where the paint was.
It's awful box tape. But, you know, what's going to happen is that thing's going to come flying down.
As it gets warmer.
It looks like it's all right. But,
it looks pretty steady.
I was thinking even during this podcast, it would just come crashing to the ground. You know?
I really like the idea of Velcroing posters because then you could, they'd have to be stiff, but then you could have interchangeable, interchangeable posters.
Yep.
Wouldn't that be cool? And you could surprise us. You could have like costume changes, only they'd be poster changes.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to change it every week, but I'll try to change it up.
I think you should change it every 5 minutes.
Okay. That's going to require a digital transmission of some sort.
Hey, let's get our Windows Phone 7 app of the week. And it's one I've already downloaded.
Yeah, I like this one a lot, actually. Weatherbug. And I've used it before on other platforms. I don't know that I ever cared one way or the other about it, but... I think the thing I like, there's a lot to like about it, but I think the reason I like it the most is, A, you can configure some number of cities or locations, right? So I'll have Dedham in Seattle because I go there in Las Vegas if I was going to CES or, you know, Paris, France, whatever it is. You have some list of cities you like, you know. And then there's also this notion of the live tile, which is updated with the actual weather of one of those cities. But it's not a one-to-one relationship. So you could have, if you're on a trip, for example, I go to Seattle, I could have the live tile, it just have the Seattle weather on it. So I can look at a glance and see, that's the weather here where I am. But when you go into the app, it displays a favorite city in the app by default as the default view. And that city could actually be a different one than the ones on the live tile. So I could just leave that on Dedham if I wanted to do it that way. Or you could have them be the same, of course, but... You can actually have the live tile and the default view in the app be different. And I think that's actually pretty unique. And it's got a nice presentation. You can actually do that live satellite thing where the clouds move across the map and all that stuff. It's nice. It's a nice little app.
Yeah, I've been looking for a live tile app.
Yeah. Well, this is one. If you want something displayed on the live tile, this is the one to get. I mean, yes. I'm not positive others don't do it, but it's just got a nice presentation. The other thing that's funny about it is, you know, if it's a clear blue day, the color of the live tile changes to match the weather.
Mm.
So this wasn't immediately obvious to me. So when I first downloaded this, it must have been a sunny, beautiful day. And I'm looking at my home screen, and every one of my tiles is a certain blue color because that's the color scheme. And then this one was a completely different blue color. And I'm like, why wouldn't they match the color of the OS? That's so stupid. But actually, it's based on the weather. So as it got dark, it changes to a dark color. If it's snowing, it changes to a little, you know, like a gray thing or whatever. And, you know, they change it based on the weather. And that's the reason it was meant to emulate a, you know, a clear blue sky.
It's free, right? Or is there a WeatherBug Elite? Yep.
Oh, I don't even know. I just have the free version.
Yeah. On some platforms, there's an elite version of it. I'm looking. I have the free
version. This one, the forecast is actually accurate. But you have to pay for that.
You really want to know
otherwise,
what it is?
It's like a roulette wheel, you know?
Yeah.
Apparently, we're getting a Category 5 death star. Oh, no, it's sunny.
Oh, no. Sorry about that. Our software of the week is it's not Windows software, interestingly enough.
No, I mean, it's going to be hard. I guess there'll always be little utilities and so forth. But I mean, I think we can expect a lot of this stuff is going to be, web-based or whatever. Although I will say that these are PC games you're basically playing online. So there's a service called OnLive, which you probably have heard of. They launched with great fanfare last year and everyone said, well, this will never work. And I've had pretty good success with it. I'm curious to see if this works well for people. But the way it works is you can just download it's basically a web-based client, you know, that you download. And it streams games over the internet. And you can pay in different ways. And it depends on the game. But most games will offer this thing where you get lifetime access, which is like buying the game. And you can play it forever. You can just you log in and you play it. But they also have usage models where you can pay for it like a day or 3 days or a week. And I think that that's actually pretty interesting. And like subscription-based music services, it's the type of thing where you have to kind of get people over the notion of, you know, buying a thing and moving on. But anyone who uses any of the game, you know, the Netflix-like game services that are out there where they ship you discs in the mail, understands that there are many video games where you basically just play it for a couple of days and then you're done. And for those games, this is kind of a nice way to go. But the other thing that's nice about OnLive is that you get free demos of games. And what it really is the full game, but it's time-limited. I want to say to 30 minutes. So you basically load the game up, and you play it, and you're actually playing the game from the beginning. You're not playing some discrete level somewhere in the middle or some little mini part of the game. You actually start the game, the real game, and you play it. And you can see if you want to buy it or, you know, pay for it some time slice or whatever. Now, if OnLive does work for you, they also sell hardware. I think it's $99, although it's on sale right now.
Yeah, it's this little box.
And what it is, it's a little box. And it basically is just a power cable and an HDMI port, if I'm not mistaken. And then you get a wireless controller that's very much like an Xbox controller. And what this does is it just gives you a dedicated way to do this on your, you know, TV like you would want to do with an Xbox 360. So, like I said, I have a decent internet connection, and I've had okay results with it. I think it's not quite as the performance is not quite as good as a local game. And these are serious games. I mean, these are not, you know, 2004's games, because those will stream well. I mean, this is, you know, Batman Arkham Asylum and a lot of newer type games. Really decent HD graphics and all that stuff. And I think the fascinating thing about this is that they can actually deliver this stuff over the internet. And I think it's, you know, the performance isn't quite there, but it's just the convenience of it. It's through the roof. It's a completely different experience. So if you're familiar with the Netflix model, you know, this is kind of Netflix on demand, but applied to video games. And it does seem to work. So it's something to check out.
I shall. Our tip of the week.
So I'll just drink right in the middle of that sentence.
Have a drink. Well, no, I think that's really the rule. Isn't that the Windows weekly drinking game is every time I say tip of the week, you drink.
Yeah. So I have two tips this week. The first is something that came up over the break, which is, I had written about how Microsoft could fix the Xbox 360 in the next year. And one of the things I complained about, and it's a particular problem for me, but I really do think this is a problem across the board, is that I have multiple Xboxes. And one of the things I would really like to be able to do is sit down in front of the Xbox in my living room, pick up a controller, play a game, pick up where I left off, and have my profile just be there. Right, and when I go back to my Xbox in my office or whatever, and have it be there again. Now, maybe everyone doesn't have two or three Xboxes in their house, but a lot of people who are Xbox users, especially younger people, have friends. And they go over to their friend's house and they have an Xbox. And wouldn't it be cool if they could log on to that Xbox and have, you know, play side by side? Now, there are ways to do this, and it's convoluted and all that. But one of the things that you can do, and this is due to a software update that came out last year, is instead of saving your profile on the Xbox hard drive, you can save it to a USB memory key. And when you do that, you do get a portable, literally, a portable profile. Because you can bring that little thing around and plug it into any Xbox, and then you can load the profile from there. and it works. And obviously, if you lost the USB memory key, you'd have to recover it and all that stuff. But you know, that would be fine. And there are some caveats. I think I'll give you the big one, but I wrote an article about this. You can find it on the Super site. But the big caveat is this: for certain games, and this does include Call of Duty Black Ops, every time you load the game, a screen will come up and say, which memory device do you want to use? Because now there are two memory devices in the computer, or in the Xbox. There's the hard drive, right, and then there's the USB memory key. And it's a little extra step. So for someone like me who doesn't need the portability all that often, it's actually better for me just to leave it on the hard drive. But the nice thing about it is, even if you don't use the USB memory key to store your profile all the time, copying it to the USB memory stick so you can bring it somewhere, it takes seconds. So it's still decent, even if you're not going to use it that way 100% of the time. So kind of an interesting thing you can do, and it's a stopgap measure until they just make this the way it should be. But at least it's there. So it's something interesting to know about.
I really have to learn all this stuff and use my Xbox more intelligently. just use it. No, I use it for the Kinect. I love it. I play Dance Central all the time.
Yep.
In the privacy of my living room.
Of course, of course.
Because I don't know about you,
for some reason it doesn't recognize me unless I'm naked. So
I was going to say that.
Right. Draw the curtains. I want to play a game. So the second tip is kind of a more broader PC-based thing, which is that, you know, and I think I probably bring this up every year, but increasingly all of our lives are stored on these hard drives. Our photos, our music collection, our home videos, you know, the data, whether it's home-related or personal or work-related or whatever, it's all on a hard drive, and hard drives fail, and that stuff is very easy to use, lose. A lot of people don't get the religion until they have a problem, and that's the wrong way to do it. And it's something I did years and years ago where I blew away several years ago and some other stuff, which I still feel really weird about. And now I'm very careful about backing up. So we've entered an age now where I really think you need to have two kinds of backups. And when I say two kinds of backups, I don't mean incremental and full backups. I mean, there need to be backups that you store locally and in your home, you know, on other hard drives, hopefully outside of your physical computer that you can bring to another physical location if you're lucky. But, you know, a second hard drive at the very least. I mean, I think this is the minimum. But I also think we're getting to the point now where these online backup solutions make a lot of sense. And depending on your needs and your budget and so forth, you should be able to find something. And I think there's a compromise to be made there. But I think this is something we all need to be doing. Because in the event of some disaster, whether it's a fire, an earthquake, or your house gets robbed or whatever it is, if all of your stuff is in two locations, but they're right in the same room, you know, that's not going to help. So as more and more of us put more and more data on these hard drives, I think backup becomes, you know, more and more important. So don't be a statistic. And I throw that out there knowing that most of you are just going to ignore it. But
no, you're preaching to the choir, dude. You're preaching to the choir. I'm always saying that.
Yeah.
And I do. And, you know, I've learned that lesson not only from my own personal experience, but because people call the radio show all the time who.
Oh, yeah.
Just horror stories.
I wrote an article that I don't think is on the site yet, but it will be published sometime today, where my son's computer had stopped booting over the holidays. And I finally went to try and fix it. And it was actually a virus bootloader attack kind of thing that was preventing it. And I attached this hard drive to my computer and got the virus, which was fantastic. Children are the best.
Oh, I'm so sorry. By the way, put that aside to go with our the best of for next year.
Yeah, 2011. Children are the best.
Children, they're the best.
I asked my son before I did this, not knowing what the problem was, and just ballpark question. Is there anything, if I had to wipe out the hard drive and just reinstall Windows, is there anything on there that you need that's important? And he said, no, didn't even think about it. I said, are you sure? You don't have pictures or school stuff? Nope, nothing. So when I connected it to my computer, of course, what I pulled down are folders and folders of cell phone photos of him and his sister playing in the yard and whatever that I've never even seen, which are fantastic.
And you want?
Dozens of school papers, you know? And I'm like, Mark, seriously, he's a kid, I get it. But I think we all have this I think sometimes you don't really realize what's there.
Right.
And that's why, again, back. Look, if you're lucky, you'll never need it. And that would be great.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's better to have it and not need it, you know?
Nothing wrong with wasting time backing up.
Yeah.
That's the kind of time wasters we want.
Well, and ideally, this thing would be automatic. I'm not going to recommend one thing that fits for everybody, but, you know, when you buy an external hard drive these days.
This was not a Carbonite ad, but it sure sounded like it.
Well, I mean, you know, but typically it comes with something.
Right.
You know, that will automate it for you. You shouldn't have to sit there and think about it.
No.
If you do, it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, it needs to be something automated, whether it's over your home network to a NAS device or whatever. And then same thing with the cloud-based backup thing. You want that thing running in the background because the first time it does it, it's going to take a while and you just want it to happen automatically.
Make it easy on yourself.
Yes.
Paul Thurrott, great way to begin 2011. Have a great time with your focus group.
Thank you.
And we'll be thinking about you at CES. When people come up to me and say, we miss Paul, I'll forward them on to you.
I have mixed emotions about missing CES. I've missed it in the past. I've obviously gone.
I missed it for 4 years and didn't miss it a thing.
It is so chaotic. I mean, I hate huge crowds like that and the crush of people and smells and the sounds.
Smells. It's so smelly. People don't know that and they won't be able to tell from our broadcast. But there's actually a rather large... Oh, no, I'm just kidding. It's the smell of money, Paul.
Smell of death is what it is. But I've had my own... You know, the focus group is interesting. I've never had a book or room like this before.
That's interesting. That's right.
I have purchased snacks of some kind. And
How does this come about? I
was talking to some guys from Microsoft about a topic I can't yet divulge in.
You could do it better.
I said, you know what? You need to be able to... prove that this thing is what it is and, how would you do blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, would you be interested in doing a group? And I said, sure. And I was sort of thinking at the time I'd go out to Seattle and do it out there. And I said, no, this is your own thing. Just do it.
You do it. Live.
So they're providing me with computers and...
well, I hope you'll share the results with us.
I expect to. Okay. I expect to.
Be very interesting.
Yeah, so we have an interesting mix of people, some technical people, obviously, but in some ways, having, average consumers, people who don't necessarily listen to this podcast are always interesting, too, because they have a different set of preconceptions and experiences and opinions, and should be interesting. It should be fun. So hopefully we don't get that Category 5 death storm that I'm waiting for. Which
oh, really? Another one coming?
Yeah, it's going to snow, but hopefully it's nothing. Usually around here it just snows, and snow is snow. But, occasionally we get the storm where it kind of pulls the Simpsons thing where it, stops over the city of Boston, and for some reason it doesn't make sense from a science standpoint. It just sits there and spins and drops stuff on us. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Ah, the magic of science.
Yep.
Paul is the author of this fine tome. I'll hold it up again because Alex can take it home. Windows Phone 7 Secrets, brand new, just out from Wiley. You'll find it everywhere, better bookstores if you have a Windows Phone. And some of you will be getting one for soon, I'm sure. This is the book to have. Paul is also the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and a world-renowned, it says here on the back.
Yeah, it must be true.
A world-renowned Windows-oriented website. He's also the author of more than 20 books about technology and a columnist for Windows IT Pro magazine.
A juvenile delinquent in the off-season.
Paul, have a great week. I'll be back next week. We'll be back on our regular schedule.
Have a good time and live through it and all that stuff, but I'm sure it'll be great.
Oh, no, I cannot wait. We're going to have so much fun.
Yeah.
And we'll see you. We do this show live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time at live.twit.tv. So you could tune in then or download the podcast.
Oh, I should show you one thing. I'm sorry to keep delaying the end of this, but when you think about all the technology I have at my disposal, one of the things I had to do was formulate a schedule. So all of these people wrote in, asked for certain times. I had to sort of accommodate all of them, how do you do this? And the way I did it was, I used a piece of paper.
Oh dear! No.
So surely. For all of the whiteboarding and whatever I could be doing here.
Funny.
Yeah, this is how I did it.
Almost ironic.
It's pathetic, is what it is. But I'll tell you this: it worked.
And that's what really counts.
Yep.
Wow.
Anyway, have a good time at CES.
Thank you, Paul. Have a good week. See you next time on Windows Weekly.